we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
This is Peter Bregan, and I have with me
Ginger Bregan.
And this is that special show where, for the first time ever, we are together on the air, and we're on America Out Loud, The Pulse, the regular 5 p.m. show every week with different stars in the field of medicine and just good, sharp thinking about the world today. We have a wonderful guest today. This is going to be a very special show. Her name is Christy Lee. And Christy is someone I interviewed way back on my TV radio show. And very popular show because she talked about being two decades in the cave with the all those terrible media ghouls and Mongols too, I don't know, hanging around and controlling what happens and trying to control us and doing the bidding of the those folks who control the world. And she finally, while having this great show of as a news anchor in California, left it and now does her own radio TV show. Christy Lee, what is your show called?
It's called Christy Lee Independent Media, and it's K-L-I-M. I was very purposeful in choosing four letters like that because when I do try and report on typical subjects that other local news stations or things are covering, if I just tell them I'm from KLIM, they know no wiser that I'm not just one of the crew there. So that's worked out well for me. But I mean, that's the kind of strategy that you need to do when you're going up against a machine. They will isolate those independent journalists and favor those that they know are under corporate control.
And you've been working also for Alex Jones. You've had me on there a couple of times over the COVID-19 period. And we all are wishing him well. He's really struggling right now.
Yes, very much. So God has really blessed me in being able to contribute to the InfoWars platform. Obviously, that's a polarizing program. You know, people either love it or hate it. But what I say to that is I spent years and years and years under corporate control in traditional news media. And I always had some directives, some assignments, and I felt limitations on what I could say or who I could speak with. Since contributing to Alex's program, InfoWars, he's never given me a directive, said who I can and can't not talk to or what I can and cannot say. So as far as I'm concerned, that's the more the place of integrity. And, you know, he does his thing, I do my thing. And I frequently am able to share my faith on that program. And so it's just worked out really nice.
Well, the more that I have listened to Alex in recent times, the more I realized that the man was taken on his shoulders years ahead of time when nobody was listening. This whole question of what Ginger and I call the global predators. And I mean, we did a lot of original deep diving in our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, to see who was the this world organization that was set up above the nations. Alex knew about this and was investigating this and talking about this at a time when you were just ridiculed out of rational conversations. And the more we realize it, the more I think about what he has had on his shoulders virtually alone for decades, seeing that there were these evil forces at work. And it's amazing that he was able to do that. Excuse me. I know when I was going into some of the deeper research and Ginger was going into it, on the global predators, we would have times when we felt we were being crushed by some opposing force that was laying waste to us spiritually and psychologically. And to think about trying to do that when there was no one really taking you anywhere in the establishment or in, you know, when he was just so alone. And I'm glad he has you there to support him and work with him. And we wish him the best in what he's doing.
We have tremendous admiration for him. And it really is true. Alex Jones was right and is right.
Sure. Yeah, it's so funny that they have a t-shirt that says Alex Jones was right. And it is a true statement. He's been right on so many things. Has he been right 100% of the time? Of course not. He's a human being. Has the news, the traditional news, been right 100% of the time? Absolutely not. So the attacks on him are horrendous, even from a journalism information disseminating platform. The fact, you know, that he's still trying to run away from this Sandy Hook thing that happened so many years ago, and his crime was speculating that maybe things weren't quite as they seem. Maybe they were, but maybe they weren't. Maybe they weren't telling us everything. And that was the position he was taking. The freedom of speech should have allowed him to at least speculate. So it's, the whole thing is just absolutely absurd that they've been able to use this lawfare to come after him. It's awful what happened. Did we get the full story? We may never know. But we have to always protect people's right to speak freely, even things that you hate. That is the whole concept of freedom of speech. Yeah. So what he's been going through has been really a fundamental attack on freedom of speech, and it's scary for all of us that are trying to disseminate information.
Well, you've been doing all kinds of interesting work all your life, and we've got a bunch of subjects that I think you know most about that are going to be really interesting to look at. We talked about a number of them. Do you want to start with the libs of TikTok, or do you want to start with the hospitalizations and the abuse of people under COVID-19? Where would you like to begin?
Well, we might as well start with the hospital horrors, as I'll say. I felt really called to speak to, I rarely see press releases. I'm only one person. I don't have a team. So it's just remarkable that I happened to see this press release about a father who'd lost his daughter in a hospital. The story is horrendous. He took her to the hospital. She is a 19-year-old with Down syndrome, high functioning, could play the violin, just a joy when you see her videos. And he took her seeking help. And very long story short, they marked in her chart 37 times that she had Down syndrome. They limited his ability to be there for her and with her. They gave her drugs that the father specifically asked them not to. He specifically asked them not to put her on a ventilator. All of these things were done. And when the sister had taken over for a moment, it was then that things really turned sour. She had to go to the bathroom. They strapped her down. And she was ultimately, again, when the sister was away, given a lethal dose of some sedatives. And just if you look at the actual recommendations, inserts on these drugs she was given, this was totally against protocol. When she got back, Grace is her name, was in trouble. And the sister was asking the nurses and the doctors to help her. And she called her parents on FaceTime, and they were like, she's DNR. She's DNR. And they're like, we didn't say she's do not resuscitate. How is that on her chart? And they're like, well, the doctor ordered her DNR. Like, it absolutely insane. So the father is on the phone and he's saying, save my daughter through FaceTime, save my daughter, save my daughter. And they're like, she's DNR. So just the absolute most horrific thing that could happen. What this father has uncovered as he's gone through and fought for the charts, like I said, and the documentation is, like I said, they marked on her chart 37 times that she had Down syndrome. They marked multiple times that the family was Christian. They marked multiple times that the family would characterize them as like somebody that would be interested in ivermectin, all these things that were like not necessary to put in the chart, but it shows a clear indication that they had bias against truly helping this family. And I think it's borderline eugenics. The fact that you cared so much about the fact that she had Down syndrome to treat her so inhumanely is just so criminal. The problem is, you know, as they've tried to take some legal recourse, it's so difficult to take any legal recourse against the hospitals right now because they have so many protections under the CARES Act and other things that were put in place for the global pandemic. What I've found is these stories are so similar. I just interviewed a woman whose husband, she took to the hospital. They had a plan going in. I do not want to be put on remdesivir. I do not want to be put on a vent. He was thinking, honey, I'm just going to get a steroid or something, and then we can go back and I'll take my treatment at home. Well, that is not what happened. She says that she regrets taking him to the hospital because essentially from the time she took him to the hospital to the time that he ultimately lost his life, he was held hostage. She couldn't get him out of the hospital. They went ahead and put him on remdesivir day one, even though she specifically asked them not to put him on that drug. Of course, they were watching his kidneys because as we know, remdesivir affects the kidneys. Well, shocker, it was affecting his kidneys. His kidneys were failing. They put him on a vent. She said, do not put him on a vent. The doctor hung up on her when she said to not put him on the vent. They went put him on a vent anyways. One of the most shocking parts of her story, she said when she was finally able to like go see him, she said, can you hear me? Can you understand me? Raise your eyebrows. Because he was on a ventilator. He raised his eyebrows. She's like, I want you to raise your eyebrows for yes. Frown for no, because I want to ask you some questions. Well, the nurse in the room overheard this exchange, went over and turned up his sedation. So she couldn't even figure out what had been going on. All of it is just so shocking. But all these stories are so similar. Ultimately, it's a long story, but she couldn't save him. They also gave him like a lethal dose of what were supposed to be not just sedatives, but like painkillers. One of the things he was given was fentanyl. I mean, it's beyond comprehension that this is happening in hospitals. People are going there thinking they're going to get help, and instead these hospitals are killing them. And then they'd have no recourse because of all of these legal immunities that had been put in place. So those are two most recent stories. And I'm unfortunately think I'm going to be doing more on just the hospital horrors that have been going on.
What seems to be the justification of the hospital's behavior? Is there any indication as to how they're justifying what they're doing?
One particular exchange she told me was that when she was asking one of the doctors, like, why are you doing this? And he's like, well, I have to protect my job. You know, I have to follow protocols. You know, this is my livelihood. And I mean, what's crazy, she looked into that and there were no policies in place that she couldn't have because she had been asking for another doctor. You know, there's policies in place that are to protect her or the loved ones. And they were supposed to follow, like if a patient asks for a specific doctor or asks for a specific treatment plan that's in the hospital policies, at least at that one, that should have been done, but it wasn't. So many of these doctors are so worried about their own careers that they are putting aside their oath to do no harm in favor of following protocols so that they're safe from any kind of action or ridicule that could be taken against them.
It's almost like doctors seem to have in the past protected themselves in various ways from liability insurance with extra tests or this or that. But now they're protecting themselves from their own employers and from the medical boards and from the federal regulations.
The culture in the health community is very telling. It's a very sick culture now, in the sense that they're all basically brown shirts feeling that they need to follow the commands. Otherwise, their licenses could be threatened. And you only have a few brave ones anymore that are truly keeping their oaths to do no harm and trying to help the patients.
Have you been working at all with Lee Valit, Dr. Lee Valit, truthforhealth.org? Because they've been going into hospitals around the country working with Peter McCullough. And they've been trying to save patients. We could put you in touch with them.
I would like to be put in touch. Peter McCullough is a true hero, and I've had the opportunity to interview him a couple times, but I have not had an opportunity to interview Lee. So
she's fabulous. We'll get you in touch with her.
This is the most amazing thing. I hadn't thought about it, Ginger, the way you just put it, which is the shift has come from you protect yourself by practicing really good medicine, being a bit cautious and overdoing the labs, and having good protection and insurance. Mm-hmm. And every doctor carries very good liability insurance. But now you're protecting yourself from your employer, and they're protecting themselves from the CDC and Anthony Fauci and NIAID and NIH. And they're protecting themselves from Bill Gates and the World Health Organization and on back to the Chinese communist influence over the World Health Organization. It's become this incredible web of global hegemony over the medical profession, so that doctors are getting the same pressure on them, identical practically everywhere, at least in the Western world, and probably certainly in India and a lot of other places.
And this is just a taste of what we're going to have if the World Health Organization takes over, actually completely consumes the healthcare on a global basis and becomes the king of healthcare on a global basis, then we're really in trouble.
Yeah, which we've talked about on our earlier shows. And we also have a blog, really, it's a weekly column. We have a column about the World Health Organization and how its next move is not just to influence pandemics, but to make treaties with countries. And many are lining up, including the entire EU and Great Britain and our own folks who go to the represent us, the World Health Organization, are backing this, taking over world health in general.
Well, we've just finished up for our first segment, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
If you're like me, you'd like life to return to some kind of normal. You're burned out on the precautions, but deep down, you still want to avoid getting sick. You've heard it talked about time and again by respected medical professionals. Use a povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray. Made in the USA, Cofix RX reduces viral loads and minimizes the risk of you getting sick. Find a retailer near you or click our banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Along with a healthy immune system, clean air is vital for optimal health. According to the EPA, we spend 90% of our time indoors, where germs are most concentrated. It's essential to clean indoor air. Genesis is the only technology that quickly, safely, and effectively kills pathogens both in the air and on surfaces in seconds, reducing the viral load in any environment. The powerful, well-built Genesis Fogger produces a dry, ultra-fine mist using HOCL, which occurs naturally in our own immune systems. We'll be living with airborne diseases in the future. New viruses and antibiotic-resistant superbugs are no problem for Genesis. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next. Visit GenesisFogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at GenesisFogger.com/OUTLOUD.
Okay, we're back, and we're here with Christy Lee, who is an independent journalist and a beautiful human being and a very, very bright human being. It's just a pleasure to talk with you, Christy.
Thank you, Ginger.
Why don't you tell us about TikTok and the libs, what is it, libs of TikTok?
So this story almost seems made up, the hypocrisy and the irony of the whole thing. So basically, you have a anonymous account, Libs of TikTok, ran by a woman, that all she basically does is curate a lot of these liberals and leftists are on TikTok and putting their videos out there. And so she curates them and puts them on Twitter to show or warn how these people are thinking. Frequently, it's teachers saying, like, I don't care what they tell me. I'm going to talk about sexuality and to my preschoolers or things like that. And frequently, it's not even any commentary. She just lets the videos speak for themselves. So she's just curating. And that's why it's called Libs of TikTok, because she's just showing the mass audience what these particular people are thinking and putting out there. So basically, Taylor Lorenz is a reporter for the Washington Post. And she decided she was going to expose Libs of TikTok. And she actually uses that word when she reaches out to the press secretary for Governor Ron DeSantis and says, I noticed that you've had some interactions with the account Libs of TikTok. I'm working on an article to expose the person behind Libs of TikTok. Do you have any comment? You have an hour. I mean, even that, you have an hour to respond. So this is what they do. This is poor journalism, where they want to act as if they've reached out and given an opportunity to respond. But really, they just want an opportunity to be like, we couldn't get a comment or something of the like. It's ridiculous to give somebody 1 hour to respond. What if she's at a doctor's appointment? What if she's, you know, whatever. But that neither here nor there. She uses the word expose. So here's the problem. This is a private citizen who purposefully wanted to remain anonymous because these people are frequently deranged and will come after you and harass you. And you would think that she would know a little something about harassment, because she was just literally crying about that about 3 weeks prior on a Meet the Press program. She was saying that she, Taylor Lorenz, had faced harassment and online bullying because of the stories that she does.
It's then the Washington Post reporter,
yes,
crying about,
yep,
being harassed
weeks prior
to deciding to harass this private individual who's simply curating, putting together, and then republishing public documents that were already placed on TikTok.
Exactly. So these people that have posted these libs of TikTok that have posted these, they're not asking for that's a tough word. They're not asking to be anonymous. They are just going and proudly putting their stuff out there. And then she's just curating it and putting it on a larger, more, we'll call it mainstream platform of Twitter, so people can see how these people think. But they didn't claim to want privacy. They proudly posted it on TikTok. Now, she, on the other hand, wanted to be anonymous, it's called Libs of TikTok, wasn't looking to be exposed. She's just a private citizen that is entering some political debate, we'll say, or entering the political ideology narrative. Now, Taylor Lorenz, so she'd been crying about this, this concept of doxing and being harassed. Then just a few weeks later, literally writes that she wants to expose Libs of TikTok and who she is. And she goes to great lengths. She goes to the family members once they track down who this person is. She goes to the family members, shows up at their door, and she ultimately does reveal the name. And she uses the Washington Post's resources and, you know, all their money to do this. So here's the thing. This is, again, a private citizen. When she writes in her article about the effect of Libs of TikToks and the right-wing narrative or whatever, that exposes her agenda for wanting to expose this private citizen, because she had the crime of wrong think and a political ideology. Now, this is so far different than the greatest pieces of journalism, Pulitzer Prize winning journalism that we've seen in the past. The common thread of great journalism in the past has been the ability to expose public agencies or administrations, not private citizens. And this is a pattern. Yes, this is a pattern we're starting to see with the liberal leftist media, is they feel like they can have this advocacy. It's called, under their words, advocacy journalism, which is just an excuse to try and sway public opinion by doxing private citizens for the crime of wrongthink.
I think they want to make examples. It's one of the things that the progressives do. They want ordinary folks, not just folks like you and me and Ginger, who are used to taking some risk and being out there. They want to scare everybody and make sure that they're the ones who own the dialogue. So
God it's forbid. Really sick.
There's
another example. In 2017, there was an anonymous poster that had put out a meme, something of the effect of like Trump running over CNN, like with a tractor or something, something like that. Well, the CNN investigated who this anonymous poster was. It just put out a meme and threatened to expose his identity if he didn't apologize. And so they ended up writing an article, and it literally says in the article, we were going to expose this person, but after an extensive apology and a commitment that he would not do this again, we have refrained. So, I mean, this is how the news organizations are using their power to threaten private citizens that have made a choice to be anonymous. And this is why they have wanted to use pseudonyms or anonymous names, because this is what they do. They go on full on attack to destroy your life.
It's making examples. I mean, that is the whole key, because something like that, where they've described what they've done, is going to affect many, many people who are very cautious and would like to be in the debate but are fearful about doing it, and has a tremendous chilling effect. It reminds me of what's going on right now with Twitter, that how desperately they want to keep control over Twitter, with Elon Musk moving in on them. Do you have any thoughts about that, Christy? I have no idea whether you had any interest in that. I think it's just fascinating, and it fits into this, that they've got to control the regular folks from having a voice, or they're just going to lose their control over America. We're going to win it back.
I think the greatest thing that Elon Musk has achieved in this whole ordeal is exposing just how insane and adamant they are about controlling the narrative. They've really exposed that this isn't about censorship for the greater good. It's about the protection of protecting the narratives that they put out. And it's so apparent now that they have come out so strongly against them. They're never equitable in this concept that billionaires and rich people shouldn't be able to do these things. I mean, obviously Jeff Bezos and his ownership of Washington Post, and even the Saudi Arabia power figure, I can't remember his name or exact title, when he said that he had more shares, they were cheering that on. So it really has nothing to do with how much money Elon Musk has or influence. Just it's this, they're that adamant about being able to silence those of us that don't follow lockstep in line with their narrative. That being said, I'm trying to discipline myself to continue to be skeptical of all people and all sides. So although this looks good on Elon Musk and it's achieved something good out of it, I don't throw all my my support that way, but just because I want to remain skeptical of Elon. He has had some involvement with the World Economic Forum. There's a Bloomberg article in 2008 that says that he was inducted, if you will, as a young global leader. So that makes me a little bit cautious. We know he has said other things about transhumanism. So I just want to be cautious about my support of him. I think that we also saw this with Trump, where some people just have have given that man so much support that it's almost like a savior complex. We need to guard ourselves against seeing anyone as a savior or our hero. And remember that you are your own hero in this fight. You need to figure out what you can influence in your circle around you and not look to figures like President Trump or Elon Musk to come riding in on a white horse and fix everything, you know, because it's just not going to happen. And it's just, you know, and obviously from the faith angle, we have one savior and that's Jesus Christ. And these other, you know, worldly figures, just for being cautious.
That is such an important point. Such an important point. You know, I've been thinking in addition to libs of TikTok, one of the ways that has influenced the public realm, so to speak, is to expose some of the inappropriate discussions that have taken place within classrooms, especially classrooms of very young children. And I believe that you've been active on your own school board to, just as a parent of children in school, to influence them in maybe not in regard, I don't know what the issues were. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I've shown there's been multiple issues in my own school district, which is just outside of Austin, particularly some of the books that were very sexual in nature and literally pornographic. There was actual pornographic depictions, but like in cartoon form. We were able to get that one removed from the library, but it is an uphill battle trying to bring these things to attention. Just the ridicule that you get and the attacks that you get. I mean, particularly in my district, a pastor and a veteran were both arrested at home on a Friday night for the crime of speaking out at a school board meeting. Like, this actually happened in my school district. Most recently, Austin ISD, not my school district, but just again, outside of it, I showed up at their campus to just expose what they were showing in their classrooms for what they were calling a Pride Week. And I was there reporting on it. They called the police. Five police officers showed up. Because they hadn't even asked me to leave. I was just reporting on what their material was and what was going on that week. They called the police, five cop cars showed up and demanded I leave. So I was actually given a citation that I like couldn't come back. I mean, this is, and you can see all that play out on my website as well. We have a story about that as well. But I mean, these people are completely insane. I mean, and just think about it. Like, all I was doing was what this libs of TikTok was doing. I was just showing what they were trying to show the kids. I was just explaining what was going on that week. And they're that afraid of people knowing and parents knowing and being fully aware of their agenda that they would have five cop cars called on me. One person with a phone camera. It's insane.
Did you do anything? Were you able to do anything about the citation? Could you get it squashed or anything?
So the citation is simply like a warning that I am not to be on that property again for a year, I guess. So it's not like doesn't go on my record, anything like that. Unfortunately, like I'm a mom of three. So as much as I want to be an activist, I do have to like try and handle things as gracefully as I can. So I was like, well, I disagree. I mean, I told the officers, you know, are you parents? Do you realize what they're doing in that school and you're coming after me? So I say my piece, but I also graciously leave because these people know no law. They know no justice. They know no fairness. They know none of that. So I know at any moment they can just decide they want to like take me to jail. And I'm sure I could have recourse if I want to be in a legal battle. But again, I'm a mom of three. I do what I can. I'm an activist as much as I can, but I can't, for me personally, I can't go completely all out because I'm trying at least to be gracious and play by the rules in some respects so that I can keep myself out of jail. You know, I got my own family to worry about.
Right.
You know, I haven't really thought so much until today, this show, about how much they pursue the ordinary citizen.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is a very...
It's important.
A very big deal that, and I'm sure they succeed in scaring folks. I want to tell folks, you know, it is scary to speak out, but once you start speaking out, you're just going to have a whole new sense of worth about yourself. Mm-hmm. You're going to meet wonderful people. You might bump into Christy Lee at one of these meetings down there. And remember that they are taking away God-given rights. We believe in the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And they are trying to trample on it. They're trying to terrify us. This is worldwide. This starts way beyond even Joe Biden and the halls of billionaires and huge corporations and the UN and Communist China. Ginger?
Actually, school boards, it just occurred to me, school boards are one of the few ways that people are able to encounter each other, get to know each other, exchange ideas, talk with other community members who are also involved in the school meetings. This is the PTA and attending the school board meetings and so forth. It's like the local town square of local communities for many young and middle-aged families. And for that to be under such pressure now, didn't the DOJ issue a ruling that parents going to these school board meetings and making threats were like terrorists? Wasn't there something like that?
Yeah, they wrote a memo referring to parents going to these school board meetings as potential domestic terrorists.
Unbelievable.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. But I continue to encourage people to go to your school board meetings, even if you're homeschooling your children, even if your kids are going to a private school. This is your community. These are other people's kids. And if their own parents won't be interested enough, then you need to be interested enough for them. Get involved.
Right. We've got just a few seconds left for this segment, and then we have one more. I'm
with Christy
so glad
Lee,
you're with
this
us.
Is tremendous, Christy.
It is wonderful.
It's so good to be back in touch with you. And we will, in the next section, have a very interesting discussion about maybe the end of the mandates for masks. We'll see.
Great.
This is Dr. Peter McCullough. Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19? We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the immune super boost that I need. Go to healthycell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD, and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're back. Christy Lee is with us today, and we are going to talk about masks. There's big news that's occurred in the last week or so. Go ahead, Christy, fill us in.
I want to start though, fill in with these wonderful videos that are all over the country right now, where this judge announced, you know, that the mandates were unconstitutional and that the CDC didn't have the power to impose them. And for the first time in history, airline pilots and flight attendants got on the on their microphones and told people, passengers, that this decision had just come down, and as of now, they were free to take off their masks. And Ginger showed me these videos of people practically dancing in the aisles and taking their masks off and cheering. And it's like, whatever happens with the judge's decision, the genie, it felt like the genie was out of the box and the people were speaking. I wanted to throw that part in before giving it back to Christy Lee. Go ahead.
Well, it really exposes their lie. Because they have such control over Twitter and all the other social medias, it gives the impression that there's a majority of people that are happily masking up and want everybody else to be masked up and think it's actually scientific, when really they are the minority, which is never more evident than these videos that are coming out. How many videos did you see of people booing when they made this announcement? I have not seen any. I've seen people cheering along. This came right after I did a story at Dallas Love Field Airport. I had just done this before this happened, and they had put up a robot, and it's called SCOT, which stands for Security Observation Control Tower, because that's not creepy at all. And basically, this robot that they were testing out could survey if people had their masks on, and if they did not, could tell them, you must put your mask on or whatever. So totally creepy. And there was two of them at Dallas Love Field. So we went and checked them out and did a report on it. When we stepped outside, and I, in typical reporter fashion, went and tried to bug people to talk to me, I asked 12 people what they thought of these towers, what they thought of the masking. Every single one of the 12 people that I had an opportunity to stop and chat with said, this is stupid. I'm so over the masks. That's so creepy about the robot. But when I would say, well, can I just get a couple of your comments on camera? No. Only one out of the 12, even though they all felt the same way, was willing to declare so publicly, which was really telling to me that I said in my report that we're getting what we deserve because of apathy, because of people not being courageous and saying how it is out loud, how it is they feel. Like, it's crazy that 12 out of 12 people that I talked to said that they didn't think the masks were effective or anything, but only one out of those 12 would be willing to say that publicly. So that was an observation I made then. So then this news comes out, obviously you're seeing that people are cheering about this, and you know, there was multiple reasons why this was not anything that should have been able to be imposed. But it took one brave judge to be able to clear that, point that out. The left is completely losing their mind. And yet again, we're being exposed to the fact that publications like NPR, even though it does receive taxpayer funding, are completely in the pocket of the Biden administration and the leftist agenda. So this article that came out last night, last evening, the headline of NPR says, the judge who tossed mask mandate misunderstood public health law, legal experts say. So for my first observation of this article is that it uses the ever popular experts say. How many times in my nearly two decades of the business did I have to say or hear said, experts say this, experts say that. It becomes a pattern of parroting that's so vague that I actually asked, even kind of earlier in my career as a reporter, like, why are we saying experts say? And that my news director at the time said, well, we always have to be conscious of writing and speaking to people at a low grade level, like think grade level 3. If we are more specific with who we're identifying it as our source, then, you know, they might not be able to understand or consume that. So translation, let's treat everybody like they're dumb. Let's elevate our source, no matter how it is that we got our source or our potential agenda for using this particular source. Let's automatically elevate them by using a very vague term, expert. And then people will be like, oh, they must know. But it rarely, rarely fits. And it would be more of more integrity to be more specific about who your source is rather than a blanket legal expert say. So legal experts say, does that mean all of them agree?
Well, and legal, not medical experts.
Exactly.
Legal experts say that doesn't make sense either.
I read this whole article. Of course, they didn't bother to get the opposing somebody that was lauding or agreeing with the judge. They only talked to legal experts that had an issue. One of the things that they had issue with is one word in the legal ruling with the definition of sanitation. So they said these random legal experts said that the judge didn't use the correct form of sanitation as being able to cover masks, and that she should have defaulted to the public health agency's definition, which would be more ridiculously broad. Wouldn't that be biased to the public health agencies that are trying to impose this? But, you know, let's not ask that question in this article, even though it would be relevant. The other issue I have in this article is there's a heading said the opinion could have lasting effects on the CDC's authority. I mean, just think about that. And they go in on how, you know, because of this, the CDC might have less authority. Since when did we, as the American people, elect anybody into office to have authority? The only authority that the CDC should ever have is what maybe our representatives give them. None of this really went through Congress as far as I know. And that was actually part of the ruling, which is completely absent from this National Public Radio NPR article. And then the last sentence of this is very telling. Even if we're skeptical about agencies or even about Congress's ability to make good judgments in this time, we certainly don't want these decisions to be in the hands of a single unelected judge. Okay, so it's okay for the decision to be in the hands of one single person, the president. Granted, he's elected, but this is a very misleading quote because it says the Congress's ability to make judgments in this. How involved were the Congress in approving this? I think he completely bypassed them, didn't he? As far as my understanding, I could be wrong.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's just another completely biased, poorly written, vague propaganda piece as opposed to news.
Well, it threatens the control of both the CDC and other unelected federal officials, bureaucrats in Health and Human Services, the CDC and so forth. And further than that, this chink in the armor of masking threatens the World Health Organization and its ability to control various nations, including ours.
Yes. Yeah, that's really important because the CDC right now is just a conduit for the World Health Organization. And that makes them a conduit from this weird combination of Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, and the Chinese Communist Party, all of whom have these special relationships, fund, and involvements with the CDC. Let me go off on a bit of a tangent that's been on my mind for years, and I never really got anybody to talk about it, which is, why are we still funding National Public Radio when it's so obviously come out to be this extraordinary left wing? And it always has been this reflex establishment organization. And we don't mean the conservative establishment. When I was doing anti-lobotomy stuff back in 1973 on stopping the resurgence of psychiatric brain mutilation, the only station that actually ambushed me by having me on to comment and then bringing on a psychosurgeon which I didn't know they were going to do, to come on and start lying, was NPR. And now I didn't mind that because, I mean, God, let some psychosurgeon try to ambush me on the radio. I mean, I feel sorry for the guy. I mean, he just humiliated him because they're liars, these guys. Nobody mutilates the brains of a decent human being. But there was NPR, and NPR didn't support my critique of Prozac or any of the early work that I was doing. Have you got thoughts about that? Are the Republicans so terrified of taking on NPR, the libertarians? Why should we be funding these people?
I mean, I think that maybe people just need to contact their representatives and make sure that it's on their radar as something that they care about. I mean, the fact of the matter is, gosh, they're coming at us in so many different ways when it comes to education, when it comes to taxes, when it comes, I mean, there's so much on the plate. Like if I was a representative, things probably would fall through the cracks just because it's like they're coming at us from so many different ways of attack. So simply a reminder to your representatives that this is an issue. I think that it could be considered, especially if we get a bit of a restructure after the midterms, that things like that can and should be considered. But I don't see it as something that they'd be afraid to bring up because it's very clear what the bias that they have and that they've been so far left. There's no reason that we as taxpayers should be funding something so blatantly biased.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the tech industry with, you know, all of the exemptions they have from being media that can be sued and things like that. Congress has backed them against itself in terms of the Republicans and Trump supporters so that, you know, folks, we really do need to change things and vote people into Congress who genuinely stand up for freedom of speech and mm-hmm. and just aren't going to put up with this nonsense.
And medical freedom.
Oh
my goodness.
I mean, that's one thing I will say that Governor Ron DeSantis has set an amazing example of just being a fighter and really pushing against these dictates. So many others in politics, they don't do enough. They, like you said, at times seem to cower in fear, but he certainly hasn't been afraid. And he is not afraid to call out the media when they misrepresent the things that he's doing.
Yeah, definitely. We've got a few minutes left. Anything further that's on your mind? I mean, this judge issue, I think we still could probably do more about. You had mentioned to us earlier just how personal these attacks have become against the judge.
Oh, yeah. They are dragging this judge through the mud, calling into question. Instead of looking at the judgment itself and really analyzing that, they just tear into her qualifications, how young she is, the fact that she was Trump appointed. It's always character assassinations as their first line of attack in these certain circumstances. I guess my main thing with that is, again, be cautious. This is certainly feels like a reason to celebrate and feel like a victory, but we don't know what they're going to pull next. And as you have said, and we thank you for continuing to push, if they are going to usher in this WHO way of attack with a treaty or something, then these are things that we won't be able to fight moving forward. So I don't want things like this to ever let anyone's guard down and thinking that this is over. You know, take the win, but keep fighting and keep knowing that behind the scenes, they have even more sinister things they're trying to usher in.
One of the things we've been talking about is how much the Putin attacks really are also a part of globalism. And there may not be enough time to get into that, but I want folks to be thinking about that because it's so important. One of the things that's going on there is Zelensky, who is getting all this wonderful PR. He is a down and out progressive, deeply involved with the World Economic Forum, with Klaus Schwab. He is was known before all this as a very corrupt politician. Apparently, and I haven't looked into this yet, he's very, very wealthy. He actually spoke at the World Economic Forum and said that he wanted his country to become a stakeholder. He wanted all these people at the World Economic Forum to become stakeholders in the Ukraine. So everywhere we look, we need to begin looking that they are not stopping. When something comes up and it gets your attention, folks, look and see, well, what are the connections here? And one of the connections is that Putin is an anti-globalist. Putin is a nasty, violent KGB guy, and he wants to revive the Russian empires of the past, and not just the USSR, but going way back earlier. There's this tremendous imperialistic quality to him. But, and this is one reason why they wanted to try to connect him with Trump, he is a nationalist in how he approaches things. He wants the nation of Russia and its satellites to become more and more powerful. And this is a huge threat to the globalists, to NATO, to the EU, which is a European Union, which is a globalist organization. So there aren't any really good guys in this fight that's going on over there. But I think it's very important to see when something happens, you got to start digging into who are the people, who are they aligned with, what are their goals. And we have this huge distraction going on now in the Ukraine, where the EU is getting stronger, where the globalists are attacking Putin through financial means, and they're all very excited now about how they can attack and control things. But that's, again, above nations, it's above legislatures, it's, again, this organization of the world, whatever we want to call it, this governance that they are really imposing on us. And everything we're looking at today goes back to a worldwide campaign to make us more authoritarian, more totalitarian. Whew, that was a quickie. Christy Lee, thank you so much for being with us. And we just look forward to continuing to work with you over the coming months and years.
You're doing great work. Me too.
Yeah, thank you so much, Christy.
Thank you. I love the work that you're doing as well.
Thanks.